What is Nivritti Lakshana? Nivritti Lakshana is the path of jnana. It is the path which takes the seeker beyond the roles of karta and bhokta. It is the path to the final purusharthaṁ, moksha. Vedanta, the final parts of the Veda, also known as Upanishad, provide these knowledge as Nivritti Lakshana. Please be aware, there is no discussion on dharma or karma in the Upanishad. That's why one should not read Upanishad without the proper guidance of a fitting guru. Otherwise, our understanding and inferences from Vedanta may easily become erroneous, not giving the desired outcomes. So jnana can be only reached through dharma. After reaching jnana, you may leave the dharma. That is a different thing. But to reach jnana, one must follow dharma. What is the benefit of following jnana or the Nivritti Lakshana? It is the path of jnana to enquire beyond the life, to realize the futility of cycling in the roles of karta and bhokta, and eventually attaining the liberation, to be free. So I'm going to just simply say the benefit is be free. So to recap again, therefore, with the special faculty of buddhi, the completion of our objective is to achieve sad not to die, be free. Just remember this, so it will give you back what we discussed. Sad not to die, be free. Only to illustrate these goals, the grand Itihasa, Ramayana and Mahabharata were compiled. What is the significance of Itihasa? Itihasa is not a fiction. Iti, ha, asa respectively means thus truly happened. It is a history. History, perhaps presented with some poetic freedom and creativity. Ramayana, one of the greatest epics, is all about illustrating the ideals of dharma. Lord Rama performed all his karma with strict adherence, even though he has to endure untold grief. But Ramayana gives us the confidence that in spite of all troubles, if we follow dharma, we will achieve happiness and excel among the human race. What is the significance of Mahabharata? Well, Ramayana explores and amplifies dharma, or the Prabhupada Lakshana. The other grand epic, Mahabharata, brings both dharma and jnana into yoga, a unified means for accomplishment. That's why Mahabharata, in particular Bhagavad Gita, which comes in Mahabharata, is valued as the fifth Veda itself. What I have also learned is that, in fact, the title Mahabharata was not the original name given to it by its composer Vedavyasa. He had called it by the name Jayaha, meaning victory, which I think is the most appropriate. But only in the later years it acquired the name Mahabharata. The same is the case with the chapter heading for Bhagavad Gita. Vedavyasa had only called them as Prathamakanta, etc., just numbered them part 1, 2, and 3. But the great scholars have renamed the chapter heading to reflect the essence of each chapter in the later years. That's how the Prathamakanta has become Arjuna Vishada Yoga. These revised chapter headings are also revealing. We shall see it later. Also, as you know, Mahabharata, the magnum opus, has got 100,000 verses, of which Bhagavad Gita is only 700 slokas in length, but considered as the jewel of the epic and the exquisite essence of all Vedas. But how does Bhagavad Gita map to the human goals? Bhagavad Gita reflects the Veda Sastras in providing us three key aspects: karma, dharma, and jnana. Although these three are interwoven, to make the point for our discussion, I force some simplicity. Karma, like the word dharma, has a number of meanings. Here, karma relates to the list of action and the ways the execution of this action. that would differentiate our life from the human beings. In other words, karmas contribute to the first of the global of the goal, differentiate from the lower life forms. But as we know, performing karma alone is not good enough. Differentiating from animal life is necessary but not sufficient. In us as human beings are many intrinsic tendencies that show reverence and respect to all life. Therefore, there are certain attitudes in life that are naturally expected from us. What are these intrinsic qualities of human being? Take an example. You are feeding your pet dog. For some reason, it does not eat. Strangely, let other dogs, other stray dogs, to eat it. That would worry you. You would think that the animal is sick, as it is not behaving the way it should be. Now imagine you also see a man eating sumptuous food in front of others who are starving. In this case too, you would think that something is wrong with this man, as he displays no basic courtesy to share his food, which is naturally expected of a human being. Same action, but different expectation. To share is the expected and natural human tendency. No one needs to refer to Vedas or Bhagavad Gita for such virtues. Therefore, we need to find answers to these two important questions. What are such noble qualities that are natural to us, which should be clearly known and carefully nurtured? Second question, what are the bad qualities that may surface naturally, like the weed that comes without our effort, but must be removed with deliberate effort from our side? Only by knowing these, we can reach the second goal, which is to instill human values to excel among the humans. These are the values we saw in the Shastras as Dharma. Bhagavad Gita explains both Dharma and Jnana in the context of real life with all sorts of physical, moral, and psychological conflicts, with Arjun as the point of reference. What is the background for Bhagavad Gita? We all know the story of Mahabharata and the reason for the war. With the television series, we are far more informed about this, which may be a good thing. So I will not dwell there, as we are not interested in the story. But the first chapter itself provides some background, which we must understand, mainly because it reveals the mindset of Arjun, a key for our understanding for the rest of the chapters. So at the place called Kuru, which is said to be somewhere near the present-day Haryana, two opposing armies were standing to fight. On one side was Kaurava, the 100 children of Dhritarashtra, with mighty warriors like Bhishma, Drona, etc., under their command. On the other side were the cousins, Panchapandava, or the five brothers, who are the children of Pandu, the younger brother of Dhritarashtra. Lord Krishna was also on this side, taking the role of a charioteer for his beloved friend Arjun. The war has reached the 10th day. The mighty Bhishma was already defeated and down on the bed of arrows. The messenger Sanjaya, who had been observing and logging the events of the war on behalf of the king, had approached the king and declared to him the fall of Bhishma. Until then, Dhritarashtra was not keenly interested to know the minute details of the war. Now, overcome by fear and the blind love on his children, even though they were unrighteous, the king had asked Sanjaya to stay next to him and narrate what all had happened before and about to happen. The composer Vedavyasa has given a very special boon to Sanjaya, his charioteer. he could remotely see what all were happening at Kurukshetra, not only at a physical level, but also the mental level of those who were waging war against each other. In fact, Vyasa offered such gift to the king first, who refused to take the offer as he did not want to get the vision, only to witness the tragedy. So Sanjaya was the gifted. What is to be understood from this chapter 1? The chapter 1 begins with the shloka, which is the question of Dhritarashtra to Sanjaya. I know you have gone through this verse by verse under the tutelage of Sri Balaji, so I shall not therefore spend time. However, I will explain the very first shloka at the end, only if time permits, as this shloka itself could consolidate the whole of Bhagavad Gita as imparted by the greatest guru, Kanchi Paramacharya. I'll come to that later. So after the very first verse, a single verse, there is no mention of Dhritarashtra in Bhagavad Gita. So verse 2 to 20 describe the great warriors at the war front. Only from verse 21 to 23, Arjuna is introduced. In these verses, he commands Krishna, his charioteer, to take up a position. He says, take my chariot to the middle of the battleground so that I can see who all had come to die on behalf of the king. Such a confident Arjun, he commands. But a mere witnessing of his own kith and kin on the other side, including the reverential teachers, was enough to baffle Arjuna. He suddenly lost his vigor to fight and all sense of duties. In the following verses till the end of the chapter, and also the first 10 verses in the next chapter, Arjun reveals his mind, speaking thus, "The war must be stopped at all counts." Finally, he drops his weapon and the will to fight. See, many lessons have to be learned from this chapter itself. So Lord Krishna has exemplified how a friend and a teacher should behave. He did not utter a single word until Arjuna had stopped talking. He simply witnessed the performance of Arjuna, who had come to the conclusion that his buddhi was no more useful to him. He cannot discriminate the right from the wrong. He lost the special abilities that we talked about so much in the human being, the buddhi. That was when he took the complete refuge of the divine feet of Krishna. That was when the relationship between Krishna and Arjun had changed from intimate friendship to an intense guru-sishya relationship. Let's ignore the story for a minute and look at the case. What does chapter 1 reveal? The title of the first chapter is Arjuna.